It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
All right, boys and girls, we are back with another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast brought to you by Fox News. You can check out all of our podcasts at foxnewspodcast.com. I hope that you'll rate, review, and subscribe to this one and share it with your friends. Today, we have a look into the abortion issue that features the audio from my Fox Nation special, Overturning Roe, which you can find on Fox Nation, streaming now, wherever you want to access it, foxnation.com. And, you know, obviously, you can sign up for a free trial and check it out. I hope that you'll tune in and check it out. This features a number of the interviews that I did that really delved into what went on over the past 50 years to achieve the momentous occasion of overturning Roe. I hope that you'll check it out on Fox Nation, but here's a sneak peek.
The Will Kane Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Kane as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
On January 22, 1973, the abortion issue in America was changed forever. The 7 men in robes said abortion was a right. The Constitution guaranteed it. They said it was right there. Even if you couldn't see it, the right is there. That heartbeat, it's just electricity. The hand reaching out, it's just a clump of cells. But some Americans woke up the next morning and they disagreed. This is their story. It is the story of a fight that didn't stop. It is the story of a long march that went on for half a century and brought a movement to the brink of victory. This is the story of overturning Roe.
Good evening. In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court today legalized abortions.
When Americans are told what Roe v. Wade actually stands for, in large majorities, they say, that's not what I thought it was, how extreme it was. Abortion on demand up until birth, really? Saying just if a doctor says so, it's in the health interest of the woman or her well-being, they could get an abortion at any point? Yes.
A lot of people think that they support Roe v. Wade, but then when you actually ask people, where do you stand on abortion? Do you support unlimited abortion? Do you support abortion up until X weeks? Then the American people lean more towards the right, and they'll say, no, I don't support abortion after whatever, 20 weeks, after the baby can feel pain. But these outlets are dishonest in how they ask people about abortion in order to frame it in the proper way.
Very few people are aware of how shockingly extreme it is. Even those places like Europe, which has a threshold of about somewhere between 12 and 16 weeks, say, oh, those Americans, you know, with their religious extremism. But if you look at what Roe, they permitted clearly abortion on request up until at least viability, and depending how you think about the health exception, up until birth. And that is bananas when it comes to the rest of the world. We are among only, I think, 7 or 8 other countries that have even remotely those kind of thresholds. So we actually have a barbaric policy.
Overnight, America went from being a place where unborn lives were protected to a nation where abortions could be performed anywhere at any time during pregnancy with limited restrictions. From the beginning, it was clear not everyone was fine with this new abortion regime. At the first March for Life, a year later in Washington, tens of thousands of protesters took to the streets in an indication of the fight that would come to upend American politics. And politicians on both sides listened. In 1976, the Republican Party officially added an anti-abortion stance to their party platform. And when Democratic presidential candidate Jimmy Carter came out against taxpayer funding for abortion, a bipartisan House passed the Hyde Amendment, doing just that. Pro-abortion advocates were outraged. They insisted the government pay for abortions for any reason, and those who disagreed were labeled as religious extremists. As a state legislator, when did you decide to make this a priority issue for yourself?
When I decided to run. I was a pro-life activist beforehand. This is, to me, the preeminent social justice issue in our lifetime. To me, it's not about faith. This is a scientific question of when does life begin, and if it's not a child, then what is this life in your womb? And I'll never forget seeing the ultrasounds of my children, and even my oldest is almost 17, but the quality of the images, how they've changed in almost the last 20 years, where you now have 4D ultrasounds where you can see really what your child looks like.
I had an abortion. At that point, I didn't know that there was, you know, any help out there. I didn't know that there were pregnancy centers. I didn't know that there was anything. I didn't know there was a pro-life movement. I was very naive. I was 19 years old. I found out that I was pregnant in my campus health clinic. I had what I thought was the flu, went in, and they said, before we give you medicine, take a pregnancy test. And when it came back positive, there was a look of sadness in the eyes of those health clinic workers, but that was it. I needed some kind of support, some kind of love in that moment, because I was overwhelmed by fear. You know, one of my favorite quotes is that you can't amputate your history from your destiny. Even though it's very hard to spend so much of my time talking about the worst thing I've ever done, it's still, it gives great meaning. I'm very open and upfront and transparent about who I am, what I've done, what I believe, and let's have a conversation about it.
I had spoken with Bernard Nathanson, who was one of the founders of NARAL, one of the radical pro-abortion groups. He had the videos that he saved of his abortions and the ultrasounds, when ultrasound technology was pretty new. And he put a movie out when he became pro-life called The Silent Scream, because he said, look at this still frame. This is the moment the child's life was being ended, and you could see the child fighting to preserve its life.
We see the child's mouth wide open in a silent scream in this particular freeze frame.
It's been said that if every member of the Congress could see this film of an early abortion, the Congress would move quickly to end the tragedy of abortion, and I pray that they will.
The Silent Scream galvanized the pro-life movement by showing the lives abortion really targeted. Widely ignored by pro-abortion advocates, it was a major escalation in the contest to win hearts and minds, as pro-lifers relied on powerful media images of children in the womb to drive the fight over abortion. The pro-abortion side responded by investing in their own information effort, as abortion giant Planned Parenthood created an action group to advance and fund media meant to drive their narrative. The battle for America's soul was ramping up.
If you're too embarrassed to talk about sex with your parents, how would you feel telling them that they're going to be grandparents? Talk about it. Call Planned Parenthood.
It's an information war, is another way of putting it. And it's the truth that is being obscured by these well-funded groups, Planned Parenthood, of course, even in its name. It's about unplanned parenthood, right? It's really, they're aborting the child because they see an unplanned pregnancy somehow as a horrible thing to happen to women, when there are so many other options now. There's adoption, there's pregnancy resource centers, there's so much support now that there are choices for women. And they try to obscure that, to try to say the only choice is to end a child's life.
First of all, it's very telling that they have internal controversy about whether or not they should be using coat hangers. A lot of people within the pro-choice, pro-abortion movement have recently been saying, please don't use coat hangers, put them away, it's not helping us, because the era that they're referring to, where they claim that women were getting injured in these back alley abortions, that wasn't really true. Bernard Nathanson, the abortionist who eventually became pro-life, he admitted that those numbers were wildly, wildly inflated, and it wasn't the problem that they made it out to be.
For the pro-life side, hope was on the horizon when Planned Parenthood sued Pennsylvania over the policies of pro-life Democrat Governor Bob Casey. It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
What could prove to be the most pivotal abortion case since Roe versus Wade was heard by the Supreme Court today.
With a new group of Republican nominees in place, it looked like the court could finally overturn Roe versus Wade. It didn't. More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this.
There are a number of things that we weren't able to put into that special that I would love to have gotten into, particularly one storyline that we were unable to get to just because of the nature of how much we would have had to untangle, is the Harriet Myers storyline that played out during the George W. Bush administration. Obviously, this was a situation that had enormous impact on the court and ultimately led to the nomination, of course, of Samuel Alito instead. This was a really divisive thing and probably one of the signal instances where the conservative movement just rose up en masse and just would not take something that George W. Bush tried to do. And Bush had obviously, you know, fomented formed a real close relationship with the evangelical base of the Republican Party over the years. They were critical to his success in 2004 with evangelical voters coming out on his behalf. And certainly, you know, as a president who had to navigate a lot of different challenges, he was one who had, promised to a lot of social conservatives that he wouldn't make the mistakes that his father had made when it came to Supreme Court nominations. Instead, though, the way that this played out was, you know, the idea of having someone who was effectively his own attorney and assistant, Harriet Myers, as a kind of stealth nominee, someone who, you know, basically George W. Bush was just asking people to have faith in him and in his decision, you know, ultimately led him into a major fight with the different activist groups and conservatives who simply did not trust him on the issue or trust his judgment or trust Harriet Myers. And ultimately, obviously, that ended up with going in a very different direction, had an enormous impact on the court. But I also think that it was kind of a sign of what was to come when it came to these types of court nominations. And certainly the step taken by Donald Trump to put out a list of his own preferred nominees, having consulted with the Heritage Foundation and with the Federalist Society, was a critical step in him winning over those voters and sending a message about what kind of president he would be when it came to court nominations, that he wouldn't just be naming, you know, members of his family or friends or things like that. I think that, frankly, that's a line that's been crossed now that will never go back, that any nominee to the Republican ticket going forward is going to have to do something like this, because I think it's going to be the new standard that basically says, look, we have plenty of good nominees out there. If you are going to give us a list, we can have confidence that it's going to be a name from that list and go from there in terms of evaluating your approach to the judiciary. I'm Ben Domenech. You've been listening to another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast. We'll be back soon with more to dive back into the fray.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.